Cool. I myself sitting here, Oaken, haven't used Namibian dollars, fiat currency, to buy my mobile airtime or data that I use on this phone in over a year. Why? Because I earn Bitcoin. Playing games, reading articles, writing articles, all that every week. I earn enough to cover the 15 Namibian dollars I need for my package that lasts for a week.
Who are the people adopting Bitcoin? What expertise do they possess that enables them to see value in Bitcoin? How is Bitcoin changing their lives? Welcome to Bitcoin with Jake, a podcast that focuses on people's personal journeys to Bitcoin and helps you understand the unique lens of each Bitcoiner. Before we crack on with the episode, humor me with 30 seconds so I can introduce our sponsor of the show. Orange Pill App is solving a problem that I personally felt. I am a user and really believe in the mission. Bitcoin meetups are great. You can't control exactly who you meet and spend time with, whilst it can be hard to actually get there in the first place. Wouldn't it be much easier if there was a way to connect with Bitcoiners in your local area? Who do you walk past every day that is also experiencing the paradigm shift that is true Bitcoin adoption? Well, this is where the Orange Pill app comes in, dubbed Bitcoin Social Layer. It's an app that allows you to connect with Bitcoiners in an ultra-local sense. For additional information, check out episode number 48 to hear Mateo's journey. He's a great guy, has built and exited businesses before, and has no doubt identified a problem that many people have. Once you've signed up, please do get in touch. Now, on to today's episode. I'm speaking with Oaken. Oaken, how are you?
I'm good, Jake. How are you doing?
I'm very, very well, mate. All the better for seeing you. So today, unsurprisingly, we're going to talk about Bitcoin. And in particular, I like to focus on people's personal journeys. So could you wind the clock back and think about the time before Bitcoin was a big part of your life and teach us about where you were, what you were doing, perhaps your main profession at the time, so we can get a bit of a picture as to where you were coming from when Bitcoin became a part of your life?
Okay, yeah. So just before I really took the plunge into seeing what Bitcoin was about and what's going on, I had just come back from China. I was doing my MBA. So I just finished getting my MBA in China. That was about July, August, 2018. I came back, and then that same year, I was contacted by a friend of mine that was in South Africa. He was in Johannesburg at the time, and he asked me, he was like, you know, Oaken, look, I don't know anybody that can do this consumer insights that I need done. And I know you could probably do this. Is it something you can do? Would you be able to facilitate this? And I was like, well, I think I can. So I decided to jump into that. So I was doing consumer insights and market research for companies, alcohol companies, for hair growth companies, you know, just all different types of clients that literally wanted to find out from the Namibian perspective what the clients on the ground, the users of their products, and consumers were actually thinking about the products and the usage of them and where they could improve their offerings and such. So that's what I was doing before I fell into that. And of course, I was doing a lot of voiceovers for banks, diamond companies, universities, just a lot of different products globally, mostly in Namibia, but did a couple in South Africa, a couple in China, a couple in more international ones. So that's what I was doing for a living before I fell into Bitcoin. Yeah.
Awesome. And so something that piques my interest there immediately is Namibia as a country. I will be honest, I know very little about where you're from. So please teach me about home and in particular, perhaps a real example for some of those consumer insights. So what were the kind of customers like that you were looking at in Namibia and how does that make you see the country?
Oh, great question, Jake. And also before we go on, thanks for having me on this podcast, by the way.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Some of your earlier ones, and I was like, man, this is pretty cool. So yeah, firstly, it's a great country. Everybody should come here and experience why. And I'll tell you why in a little bit. So for the most part, everybody loves Namibia for a different reason when you speak to them. If you speak to a lot of people from Asia or very densely populated places, Namibia is the second least densely populated place in the world. Meaning wow. For like how much land we have and how few people we have, like your neighbors are not that close to you. People don't live on top of each other like that, right? So of course you can get apartment blocks, but for the most part, I mean, man, like my neighbors are pretty far. I can play loud music and my neighbors aren't, you know, too worried about things like that, which also helps for some of us that are like minors and doing things like that. So our country is basically just a little bit smaller than South Africa, like around the same size, but we only have 3 million people, not even. Wow. I think it's like 2.6 million. And then you have to think about a lot of it is desert. right? So you can't just live in a lot of the land. So when you look at how far people are spread in the 13 regions, Namibia is made up of like 13 different regions. I live in the capital, which is Windhoek, which is in the Comas region. It's literally in the dead center of the country. Then you get like the coast, which is like the Erongo region, where you'll get a road, literally a road that separates one of the oldest deserts in the world and the ocean. You can drive along one road and there's a part where there's no road, but it's literally just the ocean smacking into the desert dunes, you know? So for a lot of people, that's an experience in its own, to just be able to sit in the desert and look out into the ocean as the sun is set. So things like that. Like, so tourism is a very big earner for Namibia. We have what's called the Big Five. So all the rhinoceroses we're talking about. We've got elephants, lions. We've got the largest cheetah population in the world. There's a lot of things you can do in Namibia. You know, you can go balloon safariing. You can go on normal self-drive safaris. You can go on toured safaris. So yeah, Namibia is a place people come to experience what it's like to be in Africa, but at the same time, have some of those Western... what's the word I'm looking for? So we were colonized by the Germans before like South Africa took over, and then we were under apartheid. But like, so you'll see when you drive like through something like Swakopmund, it's filled with old school German architecture. Somewhere like Luderitz, like these are coastal towns, but far away from each other along the coast. The country itself is situated in Southwest Africa. So it's literally right above South Africa and right underneath Angola on the coast, on the western coast. That whole stretch of land between those two countries is Namibia. How Namibia helped me get into consumer insights is, even though we're such a small country, we're normally top two for consumption per capita of beer, normally in Africa and the world. It's at festivals. We sell it at KFC. You can get like have a bucket of KFC and a six pack of beer. So beer makes a lot of money in my country, like a lot of money. I think our exports don't even compare to our consumptions locally. So we had somebody like AB InBev that does different brands, but like something like Black Label. And they wanted to know in their rebranding strategy, what would it be like from a Namibian context? What would the Namibian consumers like to see in the brand and in the branding message that speaks to them and not the South African message and the South African videos or the Botswana videos that are then, you know, just shown in Namibia and Namibians are supposed to just relate to it. So that's what they were trying to do with those consumer insights with those customers. I mean, the other ones were a bit different. But for me, because it was an alcohol type of insights campaign, we got to take these guys to parts of Namibia that they hadn't or wouldn't normally see, you know? They probably only see the capital and the coast most of the time. So we took them up north to Oshakati. We took them, you know, to different places so they can go say, oh, okay, this is what it's like in this part of the country, but in this other part of the country, that's what their consumption and outlook is like. So when we come to something like Bitcoin, this is why I was so, I wouldn't say angry, but I would say irritated with our central bank when they came up with asking for input on whether or not they should implement a central bank, what the public thinks about it. And they gave like a 2 to 3 week period for people to give what informed input.
That kind of thing,
and I was like, bro, when did you guys even go to the regions, you know, everywhere to be able to inform people what Bitcoin is, what a distributed ledger is, what you guys are trying to create and where they differ, and then have people discuss it amongst themselves and give an input. Like, that's where that also came from. It was like, when you've gone around and seen, okay, we can do consumer insights, it's not the same. Even the way we ask for the insights isn't the same from different people in different regions. How did you do it that I didn't see it in the capital? Where was it at? So like, these type of questions is what's coming up. So in Namibia right now, we're still in a very infantile stage. We've got a lot of people that are traders. They want to make a quick buck, or people that think they know a lot about Bitcoin because they read like a New York Times article, or, you know, somebody told them something about Bitcoin and that's what they're taking as the gospel now. So now it's a thing of educating people and moving through the step-by-step. Okay, what is Bitcoin? What isn't it? How do you run a node? What is self-custody? What is custody? What are these different terminologies? How do they actually coexist in your life today? And then from there, we move to an abstract, you know, what the rest of it is.
The education piece is so important, isn't it? And it's the same everywhere, to be honest. I mean, even if I think about my direct family in the UK where I grew up, or equally now here in Australia, my wife's Aussie, so I'm based in Australia. A lot of people, you know, don't know what fiat currency is or how a central bank functions. And that's okay. I didn't necessarily, and I did a business degree. You have to go and learn these things. But okay, so you got to roughly 2018, which is when Bitcoin obviously came into your life in a major way. So what was the moment that made you realize, oh, I've got to pay more attention to this thing?
I know exactly the moment. So it was actually my orange pill journey started with my brother, right? Like the actual journey. He was in Dubai. I was sending him money via Western Union. And the fees were killing me. Even just the fees to print out the documentation they asked for. 6 months bank statement showing the proof of funds, your ID identification documents, the other person's identification documents. At some points, they have to be certified. All these different things, you know, it started becoming, not that you don't want to go along with regulation. It's just, bro, like this is expensive. Then there's the fee that Western Union attaches itself to, like when you send. So I complained about it on Twitter. And the guy that was actually trying to orange pull me from 2012, who owned the first Bitcoin-only virtual asset service provider in Namibia, Landifa.com. It still exists till today. They're an on-off ramp for you to be able to buy and sell your Bitcoin through. And he tweeted back at me and said, dude, just send it to your brother in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, you know what? Just tell me how to do this now. Let's test it out. And he called me and he walked me through it for like 20 minutes to half an hour. Walk me through the entire process. This is how you download a wallet. This is how your brother should download a wallet. This is what he has to send you. This is how you buy the Bitcoin. This is how you send it through. This is how you can check it on the Block Explorer and see. Both of you can watch as it's going through, and then you'll know when it's confirmed. And so many confirmations, then you can be able to. He woke me. This was before the Lightning Network went live. So we were still doing on-chain transactions. And I was like, okay, cool. And 15 minutes later, my brother called me and he was like, what was that? How did that work? And I was like, I'm going to go find out. And that was literally, that was.
Whoa. And so okay, this business case is so good. It's basically disrupting the remittance market, which is this massive, millions and millions of dollars a year sent home from one country to another or between family members, et cetera. And the clip that Western Union takes in some cases is as high as like 25-30%. Do you remember what it was costing you roughly?
I really don't, because from now, Bitcoin took over my life. So
yeah, so it's ages ago now, isn't it? Yeah. Shout out to Lord Fusatua, who came on, who's based in Tonga, so Pacific Island, close to here. And he was talking about, you know, Pacific Islanders that are based in Australia, they want to send $100 home. Well, that $100 goes via Western Union. They lose 25 bucks in fees through that. Then their cousin has to get a 10 buck cab into town. Then there's some gangs sitting outside the Western Union, so they have to pay them off. And then they've got to get a cab home. Before you know it, literally 50% of what they sent has gone. And Tonga's got a GDP of $500 million. So if they could remove the fees in remittance, of which half of that money comes in remittance, they've literally put an extra 25 to 50% on their GDP as a country. It's crazy, the maths behind that kind of thing. And I'm sure what you're explaining is very similar.
Yeah, that's what people like Western Union them don't, or I guess they do understand it. That's how they've been making their millions continuously, right? It's us as the individuals that haven't actually put 1 + 1 = 2 and see, hey, hold on now. And that's one of the things that Bitcoin really alleviates immediately. Immediately it deletes all of that. Because you have to think as well, when you send via Western Union, a lot of the times you either have to, if your country allows it, you can go and swipe at Western Union, right? At their point of sale machine. Or you have to go withdraw that money cash. Now, the swiping or withdrawing cash, both of those are going to cost you as well in banking fees. So you're again paying another fee. Then, as you pointed out, Western Union's a hotspot in any country. You know people are going to go in there with cash, right? Like, they're either going to leave there with cash. Something's going on. So I'm targeting who's coming from them because I know you're going to have hardcore cash at some point with you, right? And if you don't have it because you went to go put it in, I'm going to follow you somewhere and make you go withdraw more cash. So it is so many attack vectors get introduced just by having to go to a Western Union. And then there was, of course, the costings that also come along with it. So that's why I always love how Jack Mueller speaks about what he's doing in relation to Western Union, because that's the truth of it. And we can all do it. It's not just his company that can do this. And that's the beauty of it too.
And so can this kind of penny drop moment happened in relation to the problem you and your brother had sending money to each other. That was now 2018, you mentioned?
Correct.
Okay, so talk me through what's happened over the last 5 years. So much like myself, I'm sure that you catch the bug and you're like, this is probably the most important technology I can possibly imagine in my lifetime. So I want to get involved. Teach me about what the last few years have brought for you.
Well, I felt pretty stupid when I started really understanding Bitcoin, because again, the guy that got me in becoming Phil, he was trying from 2012. I've known him from when we used to record music and release music under Black Vulcanite and all of that. So he's a multi award winning music producer. And then he brought in this Bitcoin thing in 2012. And I'm like, I don't understand. So when I was in China, because I was in China from 2016 till 2018. So Bitcoin was alive, right? There were blockchain events left, right, and center. And people were like, hey, Oaken, don't you want to come with us? And I was like, no, I'm here for my master's and to party with girls I'll probably never see again. Like, I'm not here to go to blockchain events and go learn something else, bro. So I never went to any of those. And then what happened was I literally came back, found out the whole thing with how to send to my brother. Then I was like, how do I monetize this for myself? So it's actually a very weird thing, but I was the first African podcaster to go on to podcasting 2.0. So to be paid by your Bitcoin, people streaming me well, which is now the norm for most podcasters, is, you know, getting paid that way. So what happened was COVID hit 2019, right? Remember, late 2018, I'm now getting into, oh, what is this Bitcoin thing? Let me see what's going on. And I'm like, oh, wait, I'm going to find the next Bitcoin in the meantime. And I'm going to like really, you know, check this out, and started looking into trading. Now, I was a shitcoiner. Long story short, I was a shitcoiner for a very long time, maybe almost half a year. Like heavily though, I was in it. I was a brand ambassador for Brave, the browser. I still use Brave till today. I believe it is a great browser. Of course, everything has its pitfalls. But as far as the fact that you could get paid for watching whatever ads you saw on your browser was very innovative to me at the time point. And I was like, how do we do this? So I had their branding on my podcast, like posters and things, and everything was, okay, how do we get to a point where not only can I get paid, but I can show my fellow Namibians, you can get paid for things that you're already doing. You're already talking on the internet. You already got a podcast. How can you get paid in Bitcoin for this? If you're doing XYZ, how can you get paid in Bitcoin for this, right? So my podcast at the time was during COVID. And funny enough, the first guest that I had was, I don't know if you're into hip hop or the hip hop scene in Australia, but he's my cousin from here, but he was born in Australia. So I think he just moved back that time, and his artist name is 1/6. Aaron is my cousin. So he was the first person that I interviewed on From the Jump podcast, which is just creatives having conversations that they would normally have when there's no cameras around, there's no fans around. And that's what we did. I started with Aaron, and I went on to different countries that I know creatives that I've either worked with or that I just personally know. And we went around the globe. We started charting a bit here and there in different countries. And then season 2 came around, and that's when I went into podcasting 2.0, really speaking with Becoming Phil. He was one of the people that I originally interviewed. And then Adam Curry them interviewed me. And that's when I found out I was actually the first African, regardless of where in the continent, to have gone on to podcasting 2.0.
And so, Oaken, first I confess, I'm afraid I don't follow the hip hop charts too closely. But the other thing I was going to mention was, in terms of podcasting 2.0, there are people out there that don't necessarily understand what that means. So talk us through the importance of it and what your experience was like with it.
Well, podcasting 2.0 is actually pretty simple, and it's very awesome. When I discovered it, I was like, ah, this makes perfect sense. So think about it like this. The model that you currently have for your podcasting apps is you pay a subscription fee, right? And it's the same like when you listen to music off of Apple Music or Spotify, whatever, right? You can listen to it for free, but when you pay up a subscription, then of course it opens you up to different things. Now, when you pay that subscription, it doesn't go to the podcast or to the artist that you're listening to on that platform. It gets split amongst the top ranking ones, and then it trickles down to the other ones, right? So what podcasting 2.0 brought in was, okay, if I'm listening to Jake on a podcast, right? And I want to give money to Jake. I want to give value to Jake for the value I receive from Jake's podcast, right? How would I do this? So podcasting 2.0 came in to say, oh, you can just pay Jake directly because you've got Bitcoin now. And then they just put in the Lightning standard, which is the second layer of Bitcoin. And they just use the Lightning network to then say, okay, what we do is we just attach Jake's podcast, his RSS feed, to his Bitcoin Lightning node. So whenever you listen to him and you say, oh, I want to stream 2 satoshis to Jake per minute while I'm listening to his hour-long podcast, or 9 satoshis to per minute, whatever, that I can set while I'm listening. I can even put it on 0. I can listen for free if Jake has put that in there. And then, and also depending on the podcasting app that I use, then all I do is I need a wallet that's attached to wherever I'm listening to it. I load it with Bitcoin, and then I just listen to your podcast, Jake. And then if I find something really cool, like, hey, Oaken said something cool, I hit the boost button. Now I can add even more. So now you as the podcaster start getting a lot more insights into what works in your podcast, what doesn't from your customer or from who's listening. Because when you're just doing a normal podcast with whether it's Apple or whoever, they give you insights, but they don't give you per second insights of, oh, people didn't like this. They really like this part. This is at minute 20 of all my podcasts where they really start boosting all of these things. Like, you now get that as a monetary insight. And you can see, oh, even if it's just one Satoshi, you know people are willing to give value for that. So as podcasters, we can get a lot more. Now, as Namibia, you have to understand how Moscow time works. When it comes in, because people are like, oh, what is 200 Satoshis to me? It's not even 10 cents, you know, in the US. Ooh, but in Namibia, 200 Satoshis is a whole dollar. So a thousand Satoshis is like $5. I can buy airtime with that. So it might not be money for some people, but I am now earning what I would normally spend in fiat currency to buy airtime for my mobile phone and data for my mobile phone by you listening to my podcast, by me playing games on my phone. So now we have a value for value economy that's also building along with this circular economy. And in tandem, that's how we get there.
The thing that really excites me about it, it incentivizes a different type of media business. So the traditional model, create intelligent or useful or funny or music or whatever you might be creating, that information is put online. And the more eyeballs you get, the more you can monetize it through adverts. So the customer of that information is not necessarily the audience, but the person that pays the advertising bill. And with that, you automatically start to self-censor. You know, you wouldn't necessarily post information that pisses off your advertiser, even though people will claim that, you know, the news desk of so-and-so broadcasting company is actually independent. It's impossible for it not to be in some ways influenced by who pays the bills. Whereas right. The value for value model enables people to pay directly to content producers for what they like or what they don't like. And actually, the thing that really excites me is not just the flipping of that incentive model to a much more true alignment. It's then like the idea that native digital payments haven't been possible up till now, and you're encouraged to pay, you know, $5 per month to someone on Patreon, or you're encouraged to pay $5 per month to a newspaper business for all of the content this person produces. But actually, you might only want to read one article or read, right, listen to one video, and suddenly it becomes like the micro market that's going to come out of this. This is a whole new market. This never existed before, and it'll be worth, you know, trillions of dollars.
It takes away a lot of things that, like think about paywalls. Why do I need a paywall, right, when I can give you value and see it? Because the thing about paywalls, it doesn't tell me whether you actually valued what the content was, right? You paid. Whether it was crap after you paid or it was great, you've already given me the money. So I could continue creating rubbish, right, and not know why people are paying me less and less times. Because I think, oh, no, it's great. Or I can give you the content and say, hey, if you found value in this, think about just, you know, donating a little bit of Bitcoin here and there. And the thing is, you don't have to give me your name, your email address, nothing. You don't have to sign up anywhere to do that.
Okay, I see nothing.
You can use a totally anonymous wallet that you just spun up just to donate to me and send it. And that is amazing. That's literally going back to people putting down the hat and, you know, playing music in the street.
I saw a great tweet recently. It was from a venture capitalist, actually, but it summed it up nicely, which was, in the future, we will look back on e-commerce as incredibly painful. And I was like, what does he mean? And I'm like, okay, well, actually, it's so true, isn't it? So first you have to search for the item that you want, then you find a few different items, and you find what you need. And then it's like, okay, cool. Well, you need to sign up as a customer. So you have to create a login and a password. And then you have to put in your address. And then you have to put in a credit card. And then the back end of that is the credit card company takes risk on your transaction and says that they'll fulfill it. And they've got to actually do that on the back end. And that's done on, you know, daily settlements between interbank fiat stuff. And you're like, whoa, this is so painful. Whereas like sending a Satoshi, a bearer instrument from one person direct to another with no middleman, you've taken like 10 steps out. And so, you know, whenever I look at startup opportunities, is it 10 times faster, 10 times stronger, or 10 times cheaper? And that's very much in that bracket of like complete step change in technology stack, which is very, very cool. Okay, what I want to do is, you touched on being a musician. So teach me a bit about that yourself and what that experience is like. And this value for value concept, what does that do to the music business and how does that change things?
Great question. Great. You just have really great questions. So yeah, I actually started out as a written poet. I started writing poetry at the age of 12, 13 years old, probably a bit earlier. And I just wrote. Then when I was in South Africa, in Cape Town, I got published for the first time. I think it was 2007 or somewhere around there. I started actually getting published like in online mediums. Like the one was called the Soapbox.fm at the time. Then I got published in I Speak Hip Hop magazine. And so I got published in a couple of actual prints. I got published in an anthology. And I was just writing. I was just writing. And I was just known as Nikolai TNB the poet. And one of my friends came up to me and he was like, look, man, I'm going to be in Cape Town. I need somebody to open for one of my sets. He's a rapper. And I said, okay, cool. I'll get on stage and I'll do a poem. First poem I ever performed in front of people. It was great. Great experience. I still have people that still today speak to me about that performance. That was about maybe 2009. Yeah. And then from there, when 2012 hit, I got called by the same guy and he was like, look, we're starting a hip hop group. At the time, we didn't have a name. It's like, we're just doing this thing and we want you to come through and just do a song with us. It's like, cool, I'll come through. Went through, they told me what they had as their lyrics. And I was like, okay, I got something for that. We went into studio on my mother's birthday, May 17th, and we recorded the first song that as Black Vulcanite called I Hope They're Right. That song got us into, well, afterwards we decided let's create a group. A hip-hop poetry group, and I just did the poetry endings, beginnings of the songs, rounded off what they were rapping about and everything. Then we started writing together. That song, I Hope They Write, got us a lot of acclaim all of a sudden. I mean, we got into Rolling Stone magazine. We got signed by a record label in South Africa.
That's fucking awesome.
Rubel Records. Yeah, it was a great time to be alive, man. We were out here. It was fun. So yeah, Black Vulcanite, we toured quite a bit. I mean, there was tours in Amsterdam. There was tours... Quite a couple of stuff happened. But yeah, we won our first award 2015. And then, of course, we all worked with Becoming Full in music, right? And Becoming Full is the guy that was trying to orange pill me from 2012.
Got you.
So when we started the group, he was already starting from then trying to tell us about Bitcoin. And we weren't, I mean, that interested, whatever. And then we released the first album 2013, Remember the Future. That thing blew up, did a lot of things. The guy that actually made the beats was from Switzerland. He flew down to Namibia just to come and make the beats with us. And we created the entire album for free, released it for free on Bandcamp, all of that. Went to China, and that was a different... So that's when I went with the whole poetry thing a bit more. But then we released our second album before I left to China, which was Black Colonialists, which spoke about how Black people need to take up spaces where they previously thought they didn't belong. And just because you don't think you're good enough doesn't mean you're not good enough. And you should stand there and, you know, speak with your chest and, like, you know, speak about what you do know and all of that. And really just, you know, tell people there's more to being African than just the color of your skin or just where you are, but, you know, everything else that comes with it too. So it was a great album. We actually have a vinyl. I think I have one here. Yeah, we got printed in a vinyl for it. It was a lot of fun. So what happened for me, where the link with music and Bitcoin and value for value came in, was when I started doing the podcast, I was like, well, this is great. While they're listening to my voice and this convo I'm having, they can stream. What if this was possible with music? And I was like, hold on, there's got to be a way. Because, I mean, if it's possible for an hour-long podcast, why can't I do a Bandcamp but based on Bitcoin? I started looking around and I found Wavelake. So Wavelake is literally... like Bandcamp, where you can decide, oh, I want to download this album or listen to this album for free, or I want to pay something. But something you pay as you listen to it or you boost it, whatever, is in Bitcoin. It you use Satoshis. So it's all Lightning-based. It's called Wavelake. Let me just see if I can get the website address. So the cool thing about Wavelake is they also integrated into the Breeze app. So if you own Breeze, you can just go to your Breeze application wallet. And then on the top left, when you click on the wallet functionality, it'll open up a menu, a drop-down menu. One of those functionalities, you'll have your point of sale, everything. One of them will say apps. When you click on
that website,
Wavelength will be there. Yeah,
I'm with you completely, right? So rather than an hour-long podcast value for value, it's like, you know, a three-minute long track. Like, come on, it's so obvious, right? And now that you've got nine decimal places of a Bitcoin, you can send whatever fraction of value you want. Whoa, this is a brand new market. So it'll be like iTunes will eventually adopt it, right? It makes sense.
Well, they'll have to. The thing is, as Wavelake builds out what they're doing now, the first one to adopt it wins. from the bigger ones, whether it's Spotify, Apple, yeah. whoever adopts this, it's an open protocol, right? Value for value is an open protocol, so they can just adopt it. But whoever adopts it first wins, because that's where all the artists are going to go. Same thing goes for videos, right? Video streaming. You've got Bitcoin TV, where it's like YouTube, but people can stream you Bitcoin for watching your videos. So all these things, as they get built out and more user-friendly, this is what I do at the events that I throw in the movie, is to show people, look, firstly, you don't have to, don't worry about how you buy Bitcoin. Let me show you how to earn it. You can earn it for things you do, like already releasing your music, your podcast, walking, reading articles, writing reviews on Apollo sets. Like, all these things exist. Playing Snake on your phone, solitaire, you know, through Zebedee, chess, all these things exist. You already do these things. That's why I always tell people, don't tell the kid not to play games on your phone. Download some Bitcoin games, give the child the phone, and earn Bitcoin while your kids are playing games. So it's all about how you approach it in your personal capacity of how can Bitcoin make a difference in my life and in others' lives without trying to tell them, hey, because it made a difference in my life this way, it's going to make a difference in your life. No. Let's first find out what your life is about. What do you like doing? Oh, you like writing poetry. Cool. Where do you publish your poetry? Oh, you're still putting it out for free. Have you heard about SatStack? You can put it out there and people will pay you for your poetry. I've tried it out and they did it. Oh, there's also this other thing you can use. So it's about linking the tools with the use cases that people already have, really. And that's literally what we do with EasySats.
Wow. So you just mentioned SatStack. I've not heard of that business.
Oh, yeah.
So that's like a Substack, but like value for value. Yeah.
Correct.
And sorry, and you just mentioned that that's what you're doing with EasySat. So that's your business, right, Oaken?
Well, so my company is actually called Oaken Trading Enterprises, so Oaken ENT. I created EasySat as a department. I think about like a marketing department,
yep.
Education department that's mixed. And that's basically EasySat. We go around trying to teach people how they can accept Bitcoin easily. Yep. And then, of course, so we show them, look, this is how quick you can accept a payment via Lightning, right? And then we tell them, but now you can move these Lightning payments that you get whenever you want to move it to your self-custodial cold storage wallet and all that. So we show them how to do that entire process as restaurants, as individuals, as, you know, any establishment that really wants to. We give them the easy one and then we show them, okay, this is how you can industrialize this thing for your company and then make it so that, let's say, all of your waiters, all of your waitresses, if somebody tips, like through the tip jar, this gets split into all their wallets, which then drains out into all of their personal Lightning wallets, and then they can move it on. So these are the solutions that, as EasySats, I think about it and I'm like, okay, cool. How can I present this company that I like to go to and show them you don't even have to go crazy and pay $100,000 for the solution? This is how quickly you could set this thing up. Places that are like nonprofit organizations, you know, like them. I'm working now with a couple that I'm trying to show them, look, this is how you guys can get donations globally. Like, if you do things for cheetahs, there's people all over the world that like cheetahs. Yeah. They give you money now instantly.
I'm thinking like you guys, you mentioned the Big Five already, you know, beautiful wildlife reserves in Namibia. They like to get funded from international donors. They have credit card issues. They have, international bank transfer issues. It's like, actually just use Bitcoin. Whoa.
And you can still do all the others. I'm not saying replace your system yet. Still take them the normal way. It's just another solution for them to go with. And then the other part of EasySats was, you know, for Namibians to buy Bitcoin, the problem was you'd have to use something like, at the time, something like Binance or Coinbase or something. And all of them, to withdraw your Bitcoin off the exchange, the minimum amount was something like 300 Namibian dollars. So just to give you the equivalence, 300 Namibian dollars is about 17 US, right? Okay. 16, 17 US dollars. That's the minimum. Now, if I'm not earning more than 1,500 or 2,000 Namibian dollars, but I want to stack in Bitcoin, I'm now limited by either leaving my Bitcoin on the exchange or not being able to withdraw it because I just can't. I don't have enough. So my thing was, how do I get Namibians to be able to get their hands on Bitcoin for the lesser amounts? And then I found Asteco Bitcoin vouchers and I became their vendor so that I could say, hey guys, you can come with 20 Namibian dollars. And the equivalent of 20 Namibian dollars is like one US dollar, right? That you can now purchase your Bitcoin voucher for. And then you can just redeem your Bitcoin the same way you redeem to how you redeem Bitcoin vouchers.
So Oaken Enterprises, you're working on a few projects, basically. As is, you know, the case with all of us that get into Bitcoin, there's Yeah. You know, the value for value podcasting, there's then the educational piece, there's then just the on-ramps, the off-ramps. There's opportunities everywhere. It's a really exciting time. And I know people listening to this, they'll be feeling the same thing, to be honest, because we're all, you know, deep down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. But Oaken, tell me this, because this is always something that I find fascinating. I was very lucky to grow up where I did in the UK and then now live in Australia, where the financial services industries are well developed. You know, you can get credit cards, you can get multiple different debit cards. It's not an issue, basically. Bitcoin is finding its feet in places where the financial services industry is not as strong. And so I like to think of product market fit is on the fringes. And Africa is a continent that is absolutely flying in that sense. And a lot of people that will be, you know, similar to myself, living in Western countries where actually they don't necessarily think the money is a problem, they don't get that Bitcoin is incredibly important to somewhere like a continent like Africa. So just in terms of Namibia specifically, teach me a bit about the banking system, the financial services like there, and how, you know, manipulated or not the central bank's currency has been, and why Bitcoin's important.
Well, it's very unique, Namibia. It's not that our financial services aren't there. They are there. The question is, why are still so many people unbanked? So let's look at it like this. Traditionally, to get a bank account, I need a residential address, right? And just that is already a barrier. Because a lot of people live in makeshift structures, or they live in shacks, or they live in the village where there are no street names. Now, the next thing I need is an identification document and an ID. What if I don't have an ID? Which a lot of people still don't. A lot of people don't have even just an ID card. They don't have one, right? Some people haven't left the village till they turned 19, 25, you know, whatever age. And then when they come out, then they need to get an identification. But before that, they didn't have an identification document. So they didn't have a bank account. They didn't have access to the financial services that everybody else had. So that alone puts a lot of people unbanked. But my thing has always been, since I heard the term, I think I heard it from Antonopoulos, which went something like, Bitcoin isn't about banking the unbanked. It's about unbanking us all. See, the banking industry is the problem, firstly, right? If you look at the fee structures, which our central bank put out a report late last year, where they literally, we've got about 9 banks in the country, and they went from the charges of point of sale machines to interbank transfers to even withdrawing fees. If you go to your own branch and you use the ATM there, the fees that they charge you to draw at your own bank, that branch where you opened, just to use the ATM, not even over the counter. All of those fees were detailed in this report. And what really got to me was when you look at it, right, even if you're banked, swiping with some of these bank cards at a point of sale machine, you get charged between $3 to $5 Namibian dollars per transaction. The last 9 transactions that week that I did in Bitcoin, buying food, beer, what, I took them all of the fees that I had for those transactions, added those 9 transactions up and divided them by 9, and they came out to less than 80 cents per transaction. Now, when you look at the scale of that alone, when you think about what can I buy with 5 Namibian dollars, not much. Okay, if I had to swipe 3 times and 15 Namibian dollars got taken from me, what can I buy with that? Oh, a loaf of bread. Now we're looking at a costing structure differently, because if I do 100 transactions on Bitcoin, I'm not getting to the structure that you're on fiat when it comes to a costing structure. So in your own mind, you're saying, oh man, I already don't have money to pay my banking fees, but the banks are taking when I'm trying to use the money that's in there to buy myself the food that I worked for, right? This was, I didn't just go get money for no reason. It was a purpose to it. So when you look at all of these things in a Namibian context, I look at it like, okay, many people have a cell phone. Have a cell phone. It might not be a smartphone, but they have a cell phone. So now, not everywhere is covered. Namibia has a goal to cover like 100% of the country with internet coverage, right? By, I think, in the next 5 or 6 years or something. And we're at like something above 80%. But the thing is, the payment plans, like just to get your data plan or whatever, right? That costs already. How do I pay for that? How do I get the money to buy the data plan? So this is for me where we come in again with Bitcoin and we say, okay, cool. I, myself sitting here, Oaken, haven't used Namibian dollars, fiat currency, to buy my mobile airtime or data that I use on this phone in over a year. Why? Because I earn Bitcoin and I use the Bitcoin that I earn playing games, reading articles, writing articles, all that every week. I earn enough to cover the $15 million I need for my package that lasts for a week, where I get 3 gigabytes of data, 90 minutes of call, and like everything, 500 SMS.
Basically, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So everything I need for a week off of my phone, I've just paid for playing games and stuff in Bitcoin. So now you don't need that, right? As somebody, but you've got a phone and you have the ability to earn Bitcoin. But now with that same amount of money, and I just told you, a loaf of bread is $15. Okay, but now in a week, I earn about $50. Now, how many times is 14 going to 50, right? So you've literally just bought 3 to 4 loaves of bread for the household, just using your phone, playing games and reading articles and walking and stuff like that. Now, a child could do this, meaning that we can start eliminating unemployment or at least decrease the rate of crime in that, oh, I'm hungry, so I have to take from somebody. No, no, let me show you how you can earn so that you don't have to be hungry. You don't have to put your life on the line for a loaf of bread and go to jail or any of that, get arrested, get something on your record. No, there's another way here now. So this is what Bitcoin, for me, brings to the table, not only for Namibia, which I'm glad that it brings to the table, but everywhere around the world. You can find another method. If you're a great speaker, you throw a great podcast, Jake. Jake can make some money from his podcast. He doesn't have to go out and say, hey, I have to speak in a certain way because this sponsor wants me to not use these words or these terminologies. No, 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 no. I used to tell people when they got on my podcast, I want you to swear immediately, because I wanted them to feel comfortable at how they can speak on the podcast, right? People that also I've never really seen swear, but they swore. And then immediately our conversation started. I could do that because I didn't have a sponsor. My sponsor was the people watching. So as long as they kept watching, I could keep doing it. And that's the beauty. You can really gauge, am I giving value or am I just shooting in the wind?
Okay, it's awesome. I can just feel your passion for this subject coming through. It seems to do this to us, you know, like here we are, we're talking a world apart, but like completely sharing this moment about how important this thing is to us from different perspectives, but equally as important. I don't like this concept that Bitcoin and its success is inevitable, because nothing in life is inevitable. You just don't know. But when you go through the economic incentive structure that you've just described, it's absolutely mind-blowing how any of these kind of, you know, first of all, the remittance business that you discussed that you and your brother had an issue with. Now we're talking about content creation and how people pay for things on a very small level and micropayments. It is an insane change in how things are going to be done digitally. And it's very, very exciting, isn't it? And so we didn't even touch on store of value. Is there an inflation problem in Namibia?
Well, I will say that the last month has been amazing for me in Bitcoin. Because I'm just like, look, just look at the world. Look what's going on with the financial structures that you guys had so much faith in, and so much trust in just 2 months ago. Look. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, maybe I should look at more of what is money? What is currency? What is this fractional reserve banking thing? What is all of this? So the thing with Namibia is, and this is also what makes it such a unique country, we already have more than one legal tender. That's already crazy, right? So we have the Namibian dollar, which is our national currency. Then we have the South African rand, which is left over from when Namibia was under South African rule during apartheid. We are still pegged 1-to-1, the Namibian dollar to the African rand. So our inflation is linked to South African inflation. Because if their basis points go up, ours will have to go up to keep up that pegging. It's just the way that it's built. So my thing is always saying, Namibia's currency problems is double imported. We first have the exported debt from the US, right? And then we also have to export the debt from, or any financial problems from, South Africa that we will also have to then deal with as a country. So when you introduce something like Bitcoin, for me, it should be just, oh, this makes sense. We peg to something that fluctuates way more towards the US dollar. And you're looking at what's going on with Bitcoin here. Which one would I want to peg to if we're already going to peg something? So for me, as Namibia should look at it, it shouldn't even be that difficult of a, we're already doing the pegging thing. We've been doing it for 33 years now. Mm. We've done it. We understand how to peg to something. How difficult is the switch over to Bitcoin? For me, it shouldn't be that difficult if you're researching all of the benefits, of course, the risks too. But when you weigh them up, I mean, El Salvador is a really great case of why. Mm. Why do it? And when you have something that has such a great landmass and so many different things that you can do in this landmass as Namibia, with so few people as a population and all of things like sun over 95% of the year, solar panels, everything, like all of these things that just add, like with Bitcoin mining and all of that, for me, it's the perfect thing. It's the perfect, you know, mix of everything together. So inflation's a problem everywhere around the world. Namibians are feeling it also more in the sense of we have high unemployment, very, very high unemployment, especially youth unemployment, extremely high. For the resources that we have as a country, which again brings up that, you know, discontent, a little bit of chaos between government. And so now there's already not the trust structure. Then you've got the big corruption cases that have happened where people have been stealing millions upon millions of Namibian dollars when you have an unemployment problem. So the governance trust is not there either. Let me give you an example. This is one thing Namibia does that other countries, I don't think they do it as well. Namibia, instead of saying, hey, we're just going to randomly print a shitload of money, they'll say, oh, we've had three presidents in the 30 years since independence, so let's make a new $30 note. And then they just print a shitload of $30 notes and push them in. Everybody's like, oh, it's a commemorative note. And I'm like, bro, doesn't that mean everybody's money in the system is worth less now? Like, all our purchasing power just went down. Wow. And then, like, now, recently, the governor 2 months ago was like, yeah, we're going to re-release into the system new $20 notes. We're not asking for the old ones back. We're releasing $20 notes because this one needs to be re-signed by the governor. I'm like, bro, how many? You're not even saying how many you're releasing into the. Wow. You get me?
Really?
So, like, all the people are not even asking the questions. They're not even asking what is it.
And that's where the education piece comes in. There's so much work to do, but people like yourself are out there talking about it. And here in Australia, I've met so many people that are out there talking about it. It's awesome. We will get there, I'm sure. I have a question from a friend, Dale. Shout out to Dale, wherever he is. And he was really bringing up the concept of short-term volatility in reference to adoption in Africa. So just to chime on your point, you mentioned it slightly just then. Is it a problem to people when you try and teach them about Bitcoin that it's volatile in the short term, or do they just immediately figure out it's better than what the current system is? So hooray, I'm in.
It's always a problem. It's a continuous problem with people that I speak with on a continuous basis. Even we go back to the volatility thing. For myself, how I don't really speak about the volatility because I try to create circular economies. So if you're earning Bitcoin and you're spending Bitcoin,
yeah,
and you're living on a Bitcoin standard, volatility doesn't matter to you because volatility is, to me, is your price that you can purchase Bitcoin at. That's what's volatile. It's the fiat price to get Bitcoin. Bitcoin isn't volatile. That's what I need people to always understand. Bitcoin doesn't have volatility like that. The volatility comes in the human perception of what it is, the value band of what I can pay for Bitcoin right now. That fiat greed index that we keep looking at, those charts, that's us deciding, oh, we can keep it at 16 or we can get it to 32 or we can get it to 69. That's the market or whatever you want to call it, deciding this is the fiat value for. And I always give people the example when they're like, oh, it's volatile. I'm like, okay, cool. If you think that you can go to Jack Mueller's and get him to sell you a whole Bitcoin at 30,000 US, show me. Or Michael Saylor, none of them are going to sell it to you at that price because to them, it's worth more. So to their value of Bitcoin isn't the same as maybe mine or anybody else's. That is something we get to personally decide on. But it doesn't change Bitcoin. Mm. Bitcoin is still Bitcoin. TikTok next block. Mm. We are deciding, hey, this is how much we are currently willing to pay for. And others are saying, no, I'm not willing to pay that price. And that equilibrium is where we're fighting that price at. Mm. But beyond that, I don't see the point in talking about price if we're not trading. Now, if you're trading Bitcoin, day trading Bitcoin, there's a problem with you because this is not what it was created for. So you're trying to push something into a bracket it wasn't created for and then complaining because it doesn't work the way you want it to. And that to me doesn't make sense. You're going to have to deal with it in its current form or just not play that game with it. So when it comes to volatility, I always tell people, Bitcoin's price is where you can get it right now. You can mine it. You don't have to pay that price for Bitcoin. You can go pay electricity, plug in a Bitcoin miner and mine it. So the volatility price is how much you have to buy it from exchanges. That's everybody in the market deciding what that price is. But you, again, only in Bitcoin would you be able to go and say, nah, I don't want to do that. I'm going to go pay my electricity bill and just mine it. That's crazy in itself. I talk around the volatility. When people really want to talk about it, I say, okay, let's discuss the actual volatility. What makes it volatile? What makes anything volatile in price? I mean, look at stocks or bond stocks, what happened? They were supposed to be really cool. Treasury stocks were supposed to be stable as fuck. Excuse my language, but look at them now.
Fire away all day, mate. No problem. But you're right. It's about reframing the conversation. So yes, it is volatile. But first and foremost, if you're being paid in Bitcoin and you're spending in Bitcoin, then it's not volatile at all. You got 50,000 sats. You just spent 20,000 sats. You got 30,000 left over. Who cares, right?
Yeah.
The volatility, once you figure it out, is not, oh, I've got $20 in my bank account. That means I've got $20. For the first time ever, there is an asset that's been marked against those $20 that no one else is manipulating. It's just hard truth. And it's extraordinary how volatile it actually is. Now, of course, there is, you know, every 4 years, a supply squeeze and all the rest of it. So there's a few more mechanics to it than as simple as I'm making it sound. Well, okay, to fast forward, let's look into the future. Oaken Enterprises, you've already mentioned you're involved in education and a few other areas. What are your plans for the next couple of years? What really gets you excited?
Oh, yeah. Oh, we got a lot of things that we're working on. I'm not going to lie. Let me see which ones I can give out. So the NFC tap cards, the vault cards, I've actually got, I gave out two as a wedding gift December last year. I was the best man at a wedding. So awesome. I gave them out with a couple of million satoshis for the bride and groom to go enjoy because they live in Amsterdam. So I was like, hey, let's get you guys, you know, you can go anywhere in the world that you're traveling and you can spend some sats. Ask them, you know, can I pay for this beer in Bitcoin and just tap your card? So I set that up for them, which we will start bringing out to festivals and things like that, just to bring a different aspect of how you can use Bitcoin in a very easy way for you at things like festivals. Instead of, you know, you normally buy these little cards that they tick off how much you've got and whatnot. Now you can just go tap and whatever you don't use, you can go use at another festival or a restaurant or just stack it yourself or whatever. Uh-huh. Things like that. So we're trying to bring that in. We're currently working on a couple of sport clubs that we're integrating Bitcoin acceptance for everything from donations to point of sale machines to tickets to their events. We literally just finished the first event in Namibia to sell Bitcoin tickets. You could buy your ticket in fiat or in Bitcoin, and then you got a discount if you bought it in Bitcoin at a fixed price of like 20,000 satoshis. So that was also a great little innovation that we pushed through. And then now, just this weekend, my niece has started racing. So we used Blink, the new Bitcoin Beach wallet's rebrand. We used the Blink wallet to get her a static QR code. We got her Lightning address, Zakia at, you know, blink.sv. And then I put it up with, like, you know, videos of her on the track going around because she's 13 and she's karting. So I'm trying to show the motorsport side as well of the sporting industry. Look, guys, you can have Bitcoin racing. Like, we can get people to sponsor little girls racing in Africa, little boys racing in Africa, help them, you know, whether it's to help them pay for tires for their racing events, whether it's prizes, whatever it is. And then we can integrate things like you can buy your tickets to the events in Bitcoin. We can get people to sponsor kids and say, hey, I want to sponsor this club because they're taking kids from, you know, impoverished neighborhoods, putting them into cars and kids that are interested in cars and helping them, whether it's how to fix the little cars or how to race them and everything in between. And that can now be sponsored, showing you the real use cases of Bitcoin. Forget the ordinals and all those things. The real use cases of how people can, from one side of the world to the other side of the world, make sure and ensure that a sport can thrive, something like Bitcoin racing. I mean, in 24 hours, my niece is just lit up with all those Satoshi things, you know, because and she's like, oh my goodness, people are sending it to me. And I'm like, it's great. It doesn't come to me. And I send it to you. It goes straight to you. It's going to your phone. So it's beautiful to see. I'm excited about what we're building for educational purposes. We're working with schools also in the hood. There's one I'm starting with that's going to be the pilot where we're going to try and see, just started off with getting donations for paint, just to repaint the school walls, you know, and cement. And stuff like that to show people, hey, you can help build up a school in Namibia, in Africa. You don't have to worry about Red Cross and who's stealing the money. You can pay direct to the school's node and help them upgrade the school. You can help them pay for whatever X, Y, Z. So that's what we're trying to show, how Bitcoin can literally change everything. Anything that you can put your mind through and say, hey, how can I crowdfund for this? How can I show people they have the opportunity to do what they always wanted to do as a philanthropist immediately now? I mean, just think about it. You, Jake, you can say, I want to adopt one child's entire school fees for a year. You pay it straight to the school. You don't pay it via Easy Sense. You pay it directly. And you
or
say,
straight to the child themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's how amazing. That's the real power of Bitcoin here. It's amazing.
Yeah, and no one can stop that. That's the kind of key bit, isn't it? Yep. That GoFundMe can't switch you off.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very cool. Sorry, I was going to mention, just in terms of sport, I have yet to get Stephen on the show, actually. It's reminding me I must do that. But there's a baseball team here in West Australia called Perth Heat. And they adopted the Bitcoin standard. I don't know if you've come across any of their stuff, but they're doing things like in-game boosting for players' performance. And they've done a whole load of back-end stuff with Ibex Mercado to actually make that happen. Yeah. So if you don't already know those guys, then I'd happily introduce you to facilitate a conversation, because they might be a bit further down the road than you in terms of actually implementing these things. But talking about the future of sport, and much like musicians, right? Rather than having to depend on these platforms where you've got outrageous platform risk, you can't necessarily even have lyrics that are like, you know, the wrong thing, for example, and they'll shut you off because, you know, they need to pay some large band all of the royalty fees that they're getting from, you know, massive subscriptions. Whereas now you can actually stream straight to a player. And so their dependence on a contract, or, you know, they don't necessarily take a percentage of the tickets of the stadium. I mean, even just on yesterday, I was in the MCG, so the Melbourne Cricket Ground here in Melbourne, and watching a game of Australian football. And there's like 25 players like running around all over each other and whatever. And you're like, well, actually, that was a pretty cool moment. Oh, that was another cool moment. And you could literally just be sitting there streaming sats to these individual players who at the end of the game would, you know, have earned money directly without their club being involved at all for their good performance. And it just completely shifts how things might work. But yeah, listen, that's another rabbit hole entirely, isn't it? We can go on for hours.
It really is. Like, we could go on for another 4 hours.
We could. Hogan, absolute legend, mate. I've loved this. Thank you so much. So the final question. So where can people reach out and get in touch if they want to do so?
Well, luckily I have the same username everywhere. So that's OKIN, that's Oken, OKIN underscore 17. So that's on Twitter, Instagram, Telegram, all the grams. I don't know. Most places. I don't have Facebook anymore. I don't believe in Facebook, but I still do have Instagram. So yeah, just Oken underscore 17. And then you can get me at my website. That's OKINENT.com. And then the email address is just oken@okenent.com. So everything, you can just find me as Oken. Jake, thank you so much for having me. It's always great to, you know, connect with other Bitcoiners that are really about education and pushing things forward adoption-wise. So thanks again for having me.
Okay, friends, nice work. You made it all the way to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this conversation. As I said at the start, if you have any questions, then please don't hesitate to reach out. And if you enjoyed the episode, then please rate, like, subscribe, and share. That's it for now. Enjoy the rest of your day. All the best, Jake.